Hi, this is Frederick Keppel. I'm the writer and publisher of the wine review blog, biggerthanyourhead.net, and I invite you to listen along to this conversation.
Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain.
Welcome to Wine and Dine.
Today we have the pleasure of meeting Frederick Keppel, who is the author of the blog Bigger Than Your Head. And really, I think we're like-minded on a lot of ideas about wine here, but I'd like to give you a little bit of background on him before we bring him up. And as he states, obviously he likes to eat and drink, but as a former teacher, he taught English at universities and colleges, and so therefore he's just really detail-oriented about his English. But because he graded so many papers, college-level papers, he's skeptical, and of course he likes balancing pleasure with that skepticism. He lives in Memphis and, along with his wife, has a propensity for fostering rescue animals. And we'd like to thank you for joining us today on Wine and Dine.
Thank you very much.
Have you always lived in Memphis?
Well, my family moved to Memphis when I was 10.
Okay.
So the largest portion of my life certainly has been here.
Okay. When you were growing up, did your family drink wine with the dinner? I'm guessing with the name Keppel, you definitely grew up with wine on the dinner table.
Well, no, actually, that's not true. My parents were teetotalers. They never drank any sort of alcohol, not really from religious reasons. We weren't particularly religious, but just sort of moral and social reasons. So I was one of those kids who had to, you know, sort of sneak out of the house in high school and get my first taste of, you know, vodka and beer and things like that. The interest in wine came about sort of naturally in college because, of course, wine has a certain cachet about, you know, well, if you drink wine, then you're more sophisticated than all the rednecks drinking beer, you know. So.
And you can say that because you are a bona fide Southerner.
It's funny, having lived in the South and in Tennessee, you know, in Tennessee most of my life, I still don't actually think of myself as a Southerner with a capital S. I mean, I don't exactly know even what that means to be a Southerner. And when we travel and people say things like, oh, well, you know, how are things in Tennessee? I have to stop and think, oh, yeah, that's right. I do live in Tennessee, you know. So.
So what do you consider yourself then? What is your terroir? What is your provenance?
I'd rather be considered, you know, a man of the world, of course, okay. And multicultural.
Okay, I got you. And I'm along the same lines as you. Okay, so I would like to also ask you, where did you come up with the name Bigger Than Your Head? Is it kind of along the lines of people who write about wine are feeling rather presumptuous that anyone cares about what their opinion is?
Yeah, that's certainly what some people accuse me of. It's actually a line, it's a caption from a cartoon by the late artist B. Cliven. A man is sitting in a diner, and a waitress actually comes to the table holding an immense tray with this Baroque concoction of food, and the caption is, never eat anything bigger than your head.
Okay.
And when I first started writing the blog, I did more with food. I don't do as much with food anymore, but I like the name, and it's the sort of name that people remember, and so I thought, well, you know, it's a brand, actually, so
exactly.
You know, let's not change it.
When you say you were writing about food, was it wine and food pairing, or you had whatever you were having for dinner night, it was what?
Yeah, I would write a lot about what we cooked at home and the pairings and that,
okay.
And what I've discovered is that I've shifted more of that to Facebook.
Okay.
You see, and so when I write about wine and food pairing on the blog, I don't include as many photographs and things like that.
Got it.
And really it's concentrated now more on wine reviews and industry commentary.
Where is this picture taken? Where are you sitting with the chandelier above you at this table and the picture of the violin, the painting of the violin?
Oh, that's our dining room.
Mm.
Although there are different pictures hanging there now. But I don't think we need to change the header on the blog.
No, I think it's a wonderful picture. I like it a lot. Very contemplative and kind of minimalism.
Although, you know, now when I look at it, I think, you know, there should be a glass of wine there.
But, no, you know. No, it's great the way it is. I think it's weird the way so many people have a picture of themselves with their nose up in a glass or something.
That's true, yes.
Yeah, that's great. So I love this current post that you have, A Rosé by Any Other Name. And that rosé, when a press release went out about it, I don't know, what, 6-5 months ago, that definitely caught my attention. And
sure.
Rob Mondavi Jr. was, I don't know, they were moving or selling something, a vineyard or something. So it didn't come together. But I would love to taste this rosé. Talk to us about this rosé, please.
Well, it's, as the name of the wine says, it's a deep rosé. And that's a trademark name, you know, so nobody's supposed to steal it. And it is actually, you know, it's 100% Cabernet. So it is made in a little more extracted style than rosés that we think of as, you know, like from the south of France, you know, very delicate and elegant, which I like very much. The Isabel Mondavi Deep Rosé has a little more flavor, a little more body. And in that sense, I think it's really a food wine rather than just a sipping wine.
Okay.
I mean, not that you can't do that.
Yeah.
But it strikes me as being maybe a little more versatile with food than many rosés tend to be.
And when you say Cabernet, you're saying Cabernet Sauvignon, not Franc. And
Cabernet Sauvignon.
Isabel Mondavi is his mother, correct?
Yes. I think.
Yeah, I think it is, because I remember doing some reading about it when it first came out. And, wow, how yummy. And really reasonably priced, you say about
$20. $20.
That's real reasonable in this day and age, a Napa Valley rosé.
Yeah. Like, I've been disconcerted to see prices of rosés going up to $25,
$28,
$30. Yeah. Because my conception of rosé is that it's, you know, something light and delicate and immediately drinkable, and so it should cost about $14, $15. So, but as more and more California wineries and producers are making rosés, we're watching a price creep.
You know, you bring up such a good point. When you consider that you can still get pretty good value, although not necessarily Provence rosés, but rosés coming from France, Spain, Italy, that are, you know, $15, $16 a bottle, plus all the cost, plus all the cost of shipping.
Yeah.
And the taxes that are coming from it being imported.
Right.
You would think that California would recognize that as a competition and bring the pricing down a little bit.
Well, you'd think that. I don't know. There's a certain cachet about making rosés now, because for so many years rosés were disdained in California.
Yeah.
You know, they were like the poor stepchildren or something. And now that rosés have become so popular, there's an aura of almost elitism about the fact that, we make 89 cases of this incredible rosé and charge, you know, $30 for it.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily even fixed costs, you know, their overhead in the cost of the rosé. It's more, and we don't even know if it's supply versus demand sort of issue. It's almost like a branding sort of a thing.
No, I would agree with that. Yeah, I mean, when you're making only a few hundred cases of a rosé, it has nothing to do really with supply and demand.
Mm. So before we go to break here, give us a little sneak peek, and we'll pick up on that when we come back, about what are you working on right now what are your thoughts about that you're going to write about? Do you write daily? Do you write weekly? Do you write whenever something, an opportunity comes?
Well, you know, when I started the blog, you know, my background in wine writing goes back 30 years. I had a print column for 20 years, and then a website, sort of a magazine-style website, and I started a blog at the same time as the website, and then that got to be too much, so I got rid of the website, and now it's just the blog. But my ideal was that I was going to post 20 times a month.
Okay.
And that proved to be really unrealistic, you know. So if I can get 12 or 16 posts a month, then I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't, it can really dominate your life. I agree. We're going to go to a short break here. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Frederick Keppel, who is the author of Bigger Than Your Head Blog. And of course, we will have links up for you to learn more. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ken Dice from Flora Springs Winery in Napa Valley, California. Our tasting room website is florasprings.com. Pick up a bottle of Trilogy or Barrel Fermented for your dinner this weekend and hope you enjoy it. Make sure you listen to Lynn at Wine and Dine Radio.
iWine Radio is a production of Food Tastes Better with Wine on the web at iWineRadio.com.
I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain.
Welcome to Wine and Dine.
Our guest is Frederick Keppel. He is the author of Bigger Than Your Head blog, and we will have a link up for you to learn more. He cares about language and literature, movies, music in almost all forms, and I kind of agree with you on the one. But Frederick, you're living in Tennessee. How come you don't like music?
Oh, country music. of course, Memphis is reputedly the home of rock and roll and the blues, and I sort of grew up with that. And I just never have cottoned, as they say, to country music.
Mm. So when you're tasting wines, what kind of music do you listen to, or is that part of your ritual of taste when you taste wine?
Well, I... not really. When you say ritual, of course, that's true. You have the routine. I'll confess that my favorite way to taste wine is to cook dinner and sit down and have a bottle of wine.
Okay.
Because there's the whole food and wine and you're sitting there with, you know, friends or family or whatever. But the truth, of course, is that most of it takes place in the kitchen right there.
Yes.
And, you know, the dogs are around.
Yeah.
And you're tasting wine and spitting and pouring and making notes and stuff. So there's nothing romantic about it.
Oh, you know what? The worst part for me, when I used to taste a lot of wines at once for a column I did in Arizona, and just opening all the bottles, preparing everything, if you're doing, you know, more than one or two wines, that's a lot of work, and
sure.
Then cleaning all up.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What are you working on now? What is your next post, or do you want to keep that secret
And as a matter of fact, I'm working on my weekend mind notes, which is my segment that I try to do every weekend, and it's very quick, incisive reviews. Not even in complete sentences. I mean, I just sort of revise my notes and put them in there, and try to do 8 or 12 or 16 wines. And as it happens, I'm doing rosés.
Oh gosh! Oh, you have to email me over the weekend a direct link to that blog post, okay? And I'll include that as well, because I'm like you. I adore rosés. And
yeah.
It doesn't matter what time of the year it is. I love rosé. So are you the cook at home, or is your wife the cook, or do you two cook together?
We both cook, sometimes taking turns, sometimes cooking together. She's a very intuitive cook who can do all sorts of things that I could never do. And I'm the kind of person who will, you know, fearlessly cook anything as long as I have a recipe to follow.
And so do you know what's for dinner this evening?
We tend not to know what's for dinner until later in the day.
You're like me. It's the same thing in my house. But you know what wine you're going to be tasting, or do you even decide that based on, you know, after you figure out what you're going to cook?
No, that'll come after we decide what we're going to cook.
Yep. So you do some travel. and wine-related travel. Here you have a post up in June about, let's call it a Renaissance at Renaissance, part three, my perspective. How much travel do you get to do?
Not a lot, really. In fact, you know, I'm connected with a lot of writers and bloggers on Facebook, and I'm amazed at how often they go places.
Yes.
And a little envious sometimes. Oh, no, they went to Burgundy. But a couple of times a year, I was in, you know, the Sierra foothills back in June, and then in May I was in the High Plains of Texas.
Wow.
Which was a fascinating little trip. A couple times to California last year, that sort of thing.
Yep. I only travel virtually these days.
Yeah.
Are you doing any teaching still?
No, not really. I taught for 17 years and then made this sort of precipitous leap into journalism.
Journalism is nice because you get to work from home and you get to do a lot of critical thinking.
Well, I spent almost 23 years as a full-time reporter for the newspaper in Memphis, and this is before anybody worked at home or anything. Actually, you know, in the newsroom and doing all sorts of things, mainly in the sort of arts and culture and food and wine areas. But I left the newspaper in 2009 and continued to freelance for them. So I do work at home and take care of the dogs.
So, and that was the commercial appeal newspaper.
Yes, right, right.
I was speaking with somebody last week about the Bloggers Conference. Did you attend the Bloggers Conference?
I've only attended one, and that was 2012, I think, when it was in Portland.
Alan Goldfarb told me that now, I don't remember exactly what he said, I want to say 60 to 70% of discussions and reviews about wines are all online, not in print anymore. Or maybe the figure was even higher than that. So bloggers are taking on a more significant impact to what's going on, you know, how consumers learning.
You know, I mean, all of us who blog hope that's the case, but it's difficult to measure.
Yeah.
You know, with any accuracy, if that's actually true or not. I mean, the way I would measure it would be the fact that I get more and more inquiries from smaller, specialized family wineries.
Yes.
Asking if I want to review their wines. And that the readership of the blog has increased significantly over the past 4 or 5 years. I mean, if those are sort of any indications that people are seeking me out, who did not previously get a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And if the readership is increasing, well, maybe that is, those are important signs. But in terms of the actual influence, there's some controversy about that.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I think that you're probably, as the expression I heard last week, one of the creme de la creme, you know, I mean, you're... Yeah, you're highly regarded in the world of wine bloggers. And so I agree with you. I'm in the same position that more and more of the smaller producers, because in a three-tier system, they don't get distribution, they don't
exactly.
get attention. And
exactly.
So they have to be more proactive and seek and find their audience
right.
elsewhere.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to read about your rosé post that you're going to be posting here. And can people subscribe to Bigger Than Your Head?
It's not subscription. I mean, it's just there.
Okay. But if people go to the website like a couple times a week or a couple times a month, they'll be able to see several new posts.
Sure. Oh, yeah, of course.
And in the meantime, if anybody wants to get up with you, we'll have a link up for them to do that. Bigger Than Your Head. And it's biggerthanyourhead.net is the link, right?
Right, yes.
Mm. Well, Frederick Koppel, this has been really wonderful meeting you this week on Wine and Dine. And if you have something that you're going to be talking about in the next, let's say, the last quarter of the year about sparkling wines and champagne, I would love to revisit with you and
well,
hear your thoughts.
That would be great. I started about 7 years ago, a sequence that I call 12 Days of Christmas with Champagne and Sparkling Wine.
Ooh,
and I post a new one every day for the 12 days of Christmas.
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, you've got to, let's say maybe the second week of December or something, let's schedule that so that we can get people on board to be checking that out every day.
Oh, that would be great.
Frederick Keppel, Bigger Than Your Head, thank you so very much for your time this week on Wine and
Dine. Thanks so much, Lynn.
We will have links up for you to learn more.
You're listening to iWine Radio.